Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Matt Fusen. Thanks for tuning in. Usually on this program, we talk about the movement to value-based care. But with COVID-19 impacting all of us, we thought it would be a good opportunity to pivot and focus on that topic today. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC and follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. On the program today, I'm talking with Dr. Mila Kawiakoski, practicing physician and co-founder and CEO of Frontline PPE Now. Mila, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it. We're very interested to hear about the work you're doing with Frontline PPE Now and COVID-19 pandemic. First, tell us about yourself, your professional credentials, and how you got to this role that you're in today.
Yeah. Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm an internal medicine physician in California. I actually practice hospital medicine, meaning I take care of primarily hospitalized patients and don't have a clinic. My pre-COVID interests included point of care ultrasound, global health, and digital health. But the current crisis, like it's changed many people's interests, has really shifted my gears to really focus on COVID-19 and advocacy efforts for healthcare workers. What really motivated me in that direction was just the lack of PPE and discussions about rationing PPE or personal protective equipment, and the relationship to that with the overall supply chain. In the early phase of the pandemic here in the US, before it had really hit us, I spent a lot of time reading about what was happening in China and in Italy, seeing videos of their healthcare workers in strict PPE, including full body suits, face masks, double everything. And, as we got closer and closer to the uptick in our pandemic, our guidelines were subsequently just being loosened. And so myself and colleagues became very concerned knowing that we were moments away from this surge. So we started a petition to shine light on the issue.
And, that petition, last I looked this morning, it was around getting close to 1.8 million signatures, I believe. It may have crossed over, not sure. And your reference to the visual, so on the petition page, which is out there on change.org, and I'll let you talk a little bit more detail about that. But the images were there, exactly kind of what you referenced. Here's what PPE is in these different countries, and here's ours. So tell us more about the petition and the response it's getting.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, it's true. We did use a visual image of PPE in China and in Italy, and I believe Korea compared to here. And it really started out of genuine concern. It started as a personal concern of mine, which I decided to bring up with friends and colleagues who at that point I realized shared my concerns. And as COVID-19 was really starting to spread across the country, there are several closed physician Facebook groups that popped up where you have 20 to 30,000 physicians really just speaking about their experiences, raising concerns. And so I really just put out a feeler on one of these large physician groups, bringing attention to the CDC guidelines, as well as the concerns that our supply chains were already limited, and asking if there would be any interest in a petition. And within hours, the post had thousands of likes, hundreds of comments asking, where do I sign? For me and my two colleagues, I spoke with colleagues that I work with, Dr. Chase and Dr. Thoda, we realized that the petition needs to happen. It needs to happen now. So the petition was drafted that night and it went out around 10 p.m. By the morning, we had over 30,000 signatures. And within 2 days,
wow,
we were at 500,000. And we're continuing to get support, as you mentioned, every day, up to almost 1.8 million today. So really it just speaks to the volume.
It's somewhat fun to watch too, because there's a little kind of counter on the side which running in real time, and it's like so-and-so just joined 15 seconds ago, and it's just nonstop. It's really cool. So that huge response, I think, the way this all unfolded was not you sat down and said, I have a plan for X, Y, and Z, and we're going to roll it out this way. It was, hey, there was interest, so let's do this thing. And then interest in that said, oh, there's a need here to do more, which led you and some others to form Frontline PPE Now. And there's the website frontlineppenow.com, or is it org?
Org.
org.org. Sorry about that. So tell us about that organization.
Yeah, so you have it exactly right. I think none of this was really planned or anticipated. And I think that once we saw the hundreds of thousands of signatures and, you know, we really felt a sense of kind of obligation to keep the momentum going, which was why the nonprofit was created. And really the nonprofit is myself and the two colleagues that I had mentioned, several other non-healthcare related individuals that are just felt passionate and wanted to help. We have a healthcare entrepreneur who advises on strategy, a media director, a policy advisor, who's actually a medical student at Stanford. And we've just come together really passionately to work really tirelessly for the efforts. And, you know, since its inception about 3 weeks ago, we've kind of just like molded this organization to be what we really think it needs to be. We started with, you know, a pretty broad mission, and we've kind of narrowed it down based on what is going on with other organizations and what the need really is. And we felt that our spot was really in informing our healthcare workers and supporters via the website. So the website has an area where you can read about media and policy and guidelines and regulations, and really just kind of like a central location for all that information. We also wanted to advocate, which is kind of our biggest goal. And so on the website, there's a spot where our healthcare workers can actually share their stories. And the goal with that is to use those stories to kind of amplify the voice of healthcare workers that perhaps don't feel comfortable speaking out or don't have a forum in which to speak out. And, you know, in our conversations and our advocacy efforts, really using those anecdotes to paint the picture, to try and guide policy and really elicit change. And lastly, you know, we're not the only organization that sprung up with COVID-19. Several organizations, many that are physician run as well, have popped up. And so what we are doing now is really connecting with those organizations and trying to pool our various strengths. Some are really focused on getting PPE to the right hands. Some are focused on donations, others on supply chain. And I think the common goal for all of us is the advocacy piece. And so, you know, now we're working with 3, 4, 5 organizations on putting out joint policy statements and really trying to have a unified voice.
Yeah, so a couple things there. One, as we were preparing for this and I was reading the stories, right? Like most of us, I'm following the news and being in this industry, following it very closely for a number of reasons, especially, but you can read articles about PPE. But when you read the firsthand accounts, it gives you a totally different visceral feeling around it that I want to jump into here a little bit more. But what I realized was when we talked late last week, so it's been almost a week since we talked, already changes. You know, one of the things, there were other orgs popping up, but now there's more concerted effort working with those organizations, which I think is really interesting and just really cool how quickly you're all making this happen. Have you been surprised by the ability for people to kind of organize so quickly? I guess the technology now is a huge advantage, but the organization at speed is amazing.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm even surprised at our own ability to do that. I think that really speaks to the urgency of the issue. I myself feel like I can't take a break because of the fact that the longer we wait and, you know, the longer it takes to get some of these important, you know, policies changed or getting equipment into the right hands, there's real lives at stake. And so that part is surprising if I think about it in pre-pandemic, you know, days.
Right.
But right now, I think it makes complete sense. There's a sense of urgency and acting fast. And so, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. It's great to see. So, you know, various stakeholders involved in this, right? There's peers, there's state and federal government level, there's healthcare organizations. What's kind of the various stakeholders' response been to your efforts and now your collective efforts with you and the group of other organizations?
Yeah, I think the overall tone has just been really positive, especially our peers. I think that what really struck me the most was how many healthcare workers, friends, and those that I didn't know in the past have just reached out to simply say, thank you. Thank you for being a voice because I didn't feel comfortable or I didn't have a way of speaking out. You know, I just get random messages on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, email, where someone has seen my name and they just feel the need to reach out and say thank you. And I think it really makes them feel connected with the larger group.
Right.
And beyond healthcare workers, it's also just, you know, your average citizen that has stepped up and also just volunteered to help. So many people want to be a part of this and want to help. You know, and it really, even the organization speaks for itself, right? Like we're all volunteering our time when we're not working or when we're working to kind of get things moving, right? Even the website, it's been developed for us for free, voluntarily, right? So everything is just a genuine effort from people all over the country, which is really just motivating and inspirational. As far as the federal government, we've also had, you know, several conversations with senators. I personally was on a call with Senator Markey's office, Senator Booker's office. Senator Booker recently advanced some PPE related issues in the coronavirus relief package to open up the supply chain and to replenish PPE. So that was very positive. I have a friend that works on Capitol Hill and told me that within the week, the first week that the petition went out, the conversation went from no PPE conversations to that being the only thing that was discussed by the end of the week. We also have, so that to me was suggestive of some sort of impact. And then tomorrow, which is really exciting, is Senator Murphy, who is trying to put forward a medical supply chain emergency act, is actually going to receive the 1.8 million signatures on a live stream from all of our
petitioners. That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's going to be really exciting because it really just kind of highlights the weight of these signatures and how even those in the federal government are using it to try and pass some of these important policies. So that's also been really great.
And what about healthcare organizations? Are you tying in there at all? Is there any collaboration? I know it's a interesting mix the way the overall healthcare organization and industry works, right? But curious about.
Yeah, so we haven't tied so much with healthcare organizations simply because we know that there are some that are doing a great job and we celebrate those. But what we're hearing is that there are significant discrepancies. And at this point, we're not in a position to know where those discrepancies really exist. And so our goal is really to make this equitable. And in my opinion, the way to make it equitable is for it to have more of this like top-down, you know, really government mandated approach. So we have kind of chosen to focus more on state and federal governments and policies than healthcare organizations individually.
Makes sense, right? You get more bang for your buck as opposed to one by one by one by one. Absolutely.
Right.
So kind of back to those stories that I referenced earlier that, you know, have such an impact whenever you read it and you realize, you know, of course, logically, we all know these are people doing this and people on the front lines that are at risk. But when you dive into that person's personal story and understand, you know, the concerns and the fears and the reality of I have a family, right? I have others that rely on me and that I need to take care of and I'm going and I'm at risk day after day. And it's not as if it's, okay, well, there's 7 days of this, and I can suck it up and get through 7 days. It's day after day with no end in sight. Tell us about some of the personal stories that you're hearing.
Yeah, so I think the personal stories have been, you know, like you said, the most compelling. To me, it's the like collection of stories as a whole that really speaks volumes. What we see is a recurrence of the same theme, right? Healthcare workers feel that they aren't being valued, that they aren't being protected. That they can't speak out, that they're worried about their families, that they're worried about not having adequate testing. One story that really speaks to me, it's actually a story from a resident in New York. You know, the whole resident issue is just another concern of mine, considering residents have historically, you know, they're trainees, they don't necessarily have the same capacity to speak out or the same resources to take a leave of action of absence if they need to. And this story is of a resident in New York at a hospital system where, you know, they are completely overtaken by COVID-19 patients to the point that orthopedic surgeons, urologists, you name it, they are all taking care of COVID-19 patients. And so the degree of exposure is massive. It's everywhere. And this specific resident, amongst others, was reusing an N95 mask, which, you know, under normal circumstances, this is a single use, you know, mask. You use it for one patient encounter, you come out, and then you throw it away and you get a new one. So now, because of the supply chain shortages, many are reusing these masks like this resident was, and he himself got sick. And when he got sick, he wanted to get tested, but was told that he doesn't need to be tested, that he just needs to stay at home. And, you know, if he gets sick enough to warrant hospitalization, that at that point he could be tested. He subsequently passed on the infection to his mother, who's in an older, higher risk population, who's now intubated in a New York City hospital. And I think that this story in particular highlights so many issues, right? It highlights the PPE shortage, the fact that our physicians are putting themselves, their own health on the line and getting sick by having to reuse specific pieces of PPE. And the concern that when we ourselves get sick, we can pass it on to our family members who might be more vulnerable. And it brings up the issue of testing healthcare workers. So a big part of understanding the impact of PPE shortages is testing, right? If we don't know how many healthcare workers have been infected, then we can't speak to the consequence of inadequate PPE. And so the numbers we're seeing are clearly a gross underestimation of the true number of infected healthcare workers.
Right.
And then lastly, which, you know, we're trying to avoid, is healthcare workers becoming the vectors themselves, right? The key to this whole pandemic is containment. And if we can't even contain this infection with our healthcare workers, then we have a real problem. And I think the story kind of highlights every aspect of that.
And when we had talked previously, one of the things that really struck me, and, you know, for our listeners that are frontline care providers, probably not shaking to them, but to me was, hey, this is the first time in your career, in likely most people's careers as clinicians and caregivers and providers, that you fear for your own health when you go to work. And when you walk into a room to see a patient, it's a totally new dynamic than anybody's really ever dealt with in the past. I thought that was interesting. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? And it has to drive for everybody a real visceral effect, right, on every day I go to work. So then it amps up stress levels even further. When you're already in a stressful situation, it just kind of builds on itself.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. I've never been in a position personally where I go to work and I'm concerned about contracting any sort of disease or infection that any of my patients have, because we've always had adequate PPE. But one thing to take into consideration with COVID-19 is it is a new virus, and we don't know exactly how it's transmitted. And so that kind of adds a layer of complexity to the issue. And most other things that we treat today, we do know how it's transmitted, and we can be certain that the level of PPE we have is adequate. So in this situation, what healthcare workers feel is that we should err on the side of caution and have the highest level of protection until we have enough data to support stepping it down. And, you know, I will say I've spent a lot of time even in Africa treating illness, and that's a very under-resourced area. And even there, I felt like I was adequately protected. And so it really speaks to just the unknowns of COVID-19 and the significant shortage here in the US. Another thing that, you know, goes along with that is I don't think any of us have been in a position ever where we have to choose between going to work and our own safety. And what I read from some of these stories is there are healthcare workers that have decided to quit their jobs because they do not feel adequately protected. And that is just, to me, in a situation like this, you know, we also have a global economic crisis. And that speaks to me of just how much they don't feel protected and how scared and anxious they are to go to work. And that is something that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the United States, the country we're in, right? The run of the richest or the richest, won't get into all that. But the fact that we're this far behind on these things, I think, should be eye-opening to people. And we've kind of talked about what we think may be changes on the other end of COVID as we move through that. But I'm going to hold that topic to have you back on a more broader post-COVID discussion that I think could be very interesting. And I know this is a bit of an unfair question because you're 3 weeks in and things are changing quickly. But as far as your organization, you know, short term, say medium term, where do you see it going? Are you recruiting more people into your specific organization? Keep kind of banding people together? And what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So, you know, this organization was really born with this pandemic. And so short term, it's unpredictable, right? Because we are reacting to the various needs that arise in light of this pandemic. But for now, we'll continue to advocate for healthcare workers and partner with these organizations in trying to just improve the conditions for healthcare workers and really try to get things moving as far as protection and safety. We are actively kind of just recruiting more individuals, more physicians, more people that want to volunteer to help just get the stories out and be a voice for our healthcare workers. It really is a dynamic process as far as kind of middle and long-term goals, because ultimately it depends on the direction that this pandemic takes. And as I said previously, I don't see this going away tomorrow or in a few weeks. So certainly medium term, we'll be around for a while, kind of just doing what we're doing and making these partnerships and seeing where our needs lie. Long term is more of a question. It really just depends, because I do hope that there will be significant changes that happen that are inspired by what we're doing today. And perhaps there won't be a need for an organization like ours. That would be the goal, right? The goal would be that there's enough change as a result of what we're seeing today that healthcare workers are protected and there are enough policies in place that this no longer is an issue in the future.
It's a great point. Your ultimate goal is to work yourself out of an organizational need, right?
Right.
Makes total sense. Speaking of that, what has the response been from medical professional associations? You know, I've read some on your own website, some other places, that not everybody's thrilled with what their professional organizations are doing for them, right? It's years and years of dues, and now, hey, we need a lot of help, and maybe they're not getting what they feel they should be getting. Thoughts on that? Thoughts on any collaboration that you're having with anybody?
Yeah, so I think that, like you said, there are some professional organizations that have really stood out and have kind of inspired us to have a voice. The ones that stand out to me are the American College of Emergency Physicians and the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. You know, obviously their constituents or their, you know, physicians are on the front lines, and they've really stepped up to put out statements that support their physicians in bringing their own personal protective equipment and speaking up if they don't feel like they have adequate protections. And they've even put in their statements that, you know, even if you're not an emergency medicine physician or you're another healthcare worker on the front line, that they would be supportive. So to me, that's a pretty big statement. The Council of Medical Specialty Societies put out a very similar statement as well. You know, this includes over 100 different medical specialties across the country that put out statements that, you know, support healthcare workers and protections and level of PPE on the front lines. But at the end of the day, that these are statements, right? They're not actionable. So what really needs to happen is there needs to be more policy derived from these statements. And so what I do hope, you know, I've been in touch with CMSS and they've been very supportive of our efforts. And probably behind closed doors, they're doing more as well. But it's really kind of these grassroots groups that have been a little bit more vocal. And so what I'm hoping is that with the combination of the grassroots organizations and the various, you know, medical professional societies, that policy can be enacted that will actually have an impact that's actionable.
That's awesome. So we're getting close to time here, and I wanted to make sure we can be very clear on where people can find more information about your organization and where they can find a petition. So if you want to tell us those couple things, so it's, I don't butcher it later when I try to say it.
Yeah, so the petition is also accessible on our website. So for the most part, our website, which is www.frontlineppenow.org. And then on Twitter, Frontline PPE Now, Facebook, also Frontline PPE Now. You can access our petition from the website as well. It's on change.org. Yeah, and if anyone is interested in connecting, my Twitter handle and my email is available on the website as well. And, you know, anyone that's interested in helping in any way, shape, or form is welcome.
Awesome. That is great. There's a YouTube, when you were going through this, there's a YouTube show that I thought of by a guy that's just maybe a little bit more famous than I am, John Krasinski, and he's doing something called Some Good News. So he just does a bit. It's like 15 minutes in his time. Maybe you should get him on Twitter. This is a great story, right? Everything you're talking about, the speed, the collaboration, it is uplifting to me and you know, the people that we've heard it. Can't wait for our podcast here. But, you know, it's been impressive what you've done along with your job, everything else you have going on in the organization. And like you said, all the great news, people just stepping up and doing it, right, for free. So thank you from all of us out here that need the healthcare and get taken care of. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah, and thank you for highlighting and amplifying our voices too. I really appreciate it, and listening to our story.
Absolutely. So thank you for joining us today. Thanks to the audience. This was a little bit of a deviation from our normal topic, but would imagine everybody clearly understands. And this podcast, as you listen to it, it'll be out there. So you might run across it 2 months from now. Don't hesitate to go support this organization, because as you have heard, it's unexpected that all of these will be solved in the next few weeks. So even if you run across this podcast in quite some time, go out, hit the website, and connect and help where you can with frontlineppenow.org. I'm Matt Fusen, bringing you Voices in Value-Based Care You Should Hear. Until next time, have a great week.